Hey, what's up? John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk. Today we're talking with Sean Arendt. The short version of introduction for Sean is that he's an activist's activist. In his passion for making this a better world, he has cast his net wide, including working for Vision for Social Responsibility, furthering their goal of eliminating nuclear weapons. He's taken an activist role with the Tacoma for All group, an effort that resulted in Tacoma voters passing the state's strongest tenant protections this year. He's been active with environmental groups, too many to list, but a sampling, the Sunrise Movement, 350 Tacoma, the Climate Reality Project, and Redefine Tacoma. Sean does much more than activist talk. He does boots on the ground and gets his hands dirty, like leading work parties at Tacoma's Swan Creek, where volunteers remove invasives like Scotch broom and blackberry, and then plant native species to restore the natural ecosystem. Hard but effective work that converts worry into tending to our damaged physical world. Fittingly, Sean recently received the Tacoma Metro Parks Champion Award, which recognizes folks like Sean who go above and beyond in their support of our parks. Our focus with Sean today is going to be around his activism with attending to the Clover Park watershed, an ecological system that once was a thriving and brilliant connection of creeks and lakes that was home to wildlife of all kinds and which provided sustenance to the indigenous people who lived along its banks for millennia, most of which has been destroyed by development and overuse of the aquifer that feeds the creeks. Sean and the Clover Creek Restoration Alliance, of which Sean is president, aim to restore that precious watershed to health. So here we go with our conversation with Sean Arendt. Sean Arendt, welcome to Climate Talk.
Thanks for having me.
So you're president of the Clover Creek Restoration Alliance. Why don't you start off by telling us, when you say Clover Creek, that's the way I understand it. It covers quite a bit of Pierce County geography. So say a little bit about what we're talking about here in terms of waterways.
Yeah, the Clover Chambers watershed is what I would call like middle Pierce County. So it includes most of Tacoma and goes down to the city of DuPont. Clover Creek itself feeds into Chambers Creek, pretty popular kind of hiking destination in the area. And it is fed by upstream, you know, as a broader Clover Creek, by Flett Creek, Leech Creek, Ponce de Leon Creek, Spanaway Creek, and Morey Creek. It runs through Lake Steilacoom and Lakewood. There's actually a dam on that section which created the lake as we know it today.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of geography there, and my sense is even just thinking about myself is that a lot of it is out there and the average person doesn't have a clue. Do you think that that's fair to say?
Yeah, it's fair to say. I mean, it's, you know, if you're sitting in like Lakewood Town Center, most people don't realize that Ponce de Leon Creek is right under their feet. The city of Lakewood built their town center over the headwaters of that creek.
Wow. So it's a restoration alliance. So why? What needs restoring? Why restoration? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is, of course, water. Clover Creek, as it runs through Parkland, Spanaway, under the McCord Airfield, and through Lakewood, has been running dry. So there isn't really a connection between the upper reaches and, you know, Fredrickson and South Hill and, you know, deep into Spanaway and the lake and Chambers Creek. So that dry reach is preventing fish from migrating from the ocean through Chambers Creek into that upstream habitat. That's the main thing. Once we get water, we of course want to bring salmon back. We realize that, you know, salmon are the primary food source for the southern resident orca. They are a vital cultural resource for the Puyallup and Nisqually peoples. And they have an important role in the carbon cycle.
Running dry. So it's, my guess is we have pretty much as much rain as we've ever had. So what's happened that this this creek system is running dry sometimes, or maybe a lot of the time.
Yeah, there's a few watersheds. I would say, Clover Chambers, and then across the bridge, if you were to look at, Gig Harbor, Key Peninsula watershed, that do not have any glacial feed. So they're not coming from snow melt or glacier melt. So these watersheds rely on springs and groundwater recharge. If you were to go into, I mean, anyone's been in Parkland and Lakewood, you'll see a lot of concrete. And that's part of it, is that we've paved over the areas in this watershed that used to have permeable soil and trees that allowed the groundwater to penetrate and recharge these springs in the creek. But that's not all. So the other part of it is that a lot of people, including a few private companies, have wells in this watershed where they're drawing out water. And then people drink it, and then they, through their waste, send it out to the sewer system, where instead of that water recharging, it goes out to Chambers Bay to the Pierce County Waste Treatment Facility. So you have this water coming out, but not coming back in, just through the act of people drinking it. In addition, I mean, there's been kind of rumors that Bruce Stammeyer, the county executive, invited in these water bottling companies to pump out groundwater, bottle it, and sell it. So less infiltration happening there. Yeah, there are a myriad of problems, but it starts with the fact that there's no water.
Yeah, so interesting. So just to sort of encapsulate, so we have creeks running dry. Those creeks don't get glacial runoff. They rely on springs. The springs rely on the groundwater, and the groundwater is being challenged in several different ways that you described there. So that brings me then to the question. I mean, it seems like replenishing groundwater is a hell of a challenge.
Yeah, I mean it would start with conservation, right? So preserving wetlands that have that function, that would be an important step. Preserving, the few mature forests we have, another important step. But really, we have to, we have to change our infrastructure. We're going to need to use things like potentially permeable pavement. We need to, innovate in a way where we can, get all these damn warehouses that are coming in to, lower their footprint, to preserve native trees. Trees have this important, connection to helping groundwater run down. They just follow the root system, and it helps it penetrate. And yeah, we've had a county that hasn't been willing to do that. And, we've seen that the county executive, Bruce Stammeyer, has, he's used his executive privilege to push through a development on the headwaters of Spanaway Creek. So taking out one of the last healthy mature forests and part of a wetland there, to build the what's called the Good Neighbor Village, his idea for addressing the homelessness crisis. So this is a very controversial project. It's been protested for years. The community's raised over $100,000 to fight it, and the executive pushed it through. And the contractor, Tacoma Rescue Mission, went in and illegally modified the creek to, I guess, help their case, and faced very limited repercussions about it.
Yeah, so a huge challenge. I think you do sketch out, okay, there are solutions. They're not easy solutions to achieve. So I'm curious. So there's a major aquifer under where the Bridge Industries warehouse project is going to be going in. Does that aquifer have anything to do with the creek system that we're talking about?
Yeah, so that's in the it's in the watershed. That's in, I think, the Flint sub-basin. So those springs and wetlands that they're sealing over right now, the Department of Ecology actually wanted to study the amount of groundwater recharge that was going in there, and whether it was feeding into the Flint Creek. And they had plans to put in a groundwater monitoring station there, but of course that was totally scuttled by the project. Didn't even get to study it.
So hard to find good news about the Bridge Industries project there, and that sounds like another one of them. So let's talk a little bit about the history of the Clover Creek Restoration Alliance. How long has that organization existed, and how long has it been working at addressing these issues that you raise?
Yeah, so we've had for many, many years the Clover Chambers Creek Watershed Council. The watershed councils are set up by the county. The county supports them, and they are, often convening bodies that discuss issues in the watershed. I think probably in the 70s or 80s, a gentleman named Al Schmouder, who's been on the watershed council for years and years, started the Clover Creek Council. Clover Creek Council was meant to do more of that outside advocacy and hands-on work that the Watershed Council is limited by or limited in their ability to do. And then it kind of sat dormant for, probably 15, 20 years at least. We started organizing and met up with Al, who said, "You know what? I still pay the filing fee, but I'm not doing anything with this. So why don't you all take it over?" So we have been a revived nonprofit for about a year.
Awesome. Well, so the challenges that the organization faces are clear to me just listening to you sum up some of them. So how did you personally get interested in this? What's your background and why, what on earth would lead you to take on such a challenge that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I've been an environmental activist for many years, and I like to do hands-on restoration work. I used to be a steward at Mima Mounds in Thurston County, the Nisqually Land Trust. I've always been really inspired by the work that they've done in protecting Nisqually River, which I used to live a stone's throw from. And then when I moved to Tacoma, I was, looking for other opportunities and got signed up as the steward of Swan Creek Park, which is actually the Puyallup watershed. But I think what a few things made me really start paying attention to Clover Creek and that watershed. Part of it is that my family on my mom's side used to own a farm on Leech Creek, and frankly, I've always been pretty upset by the fact that it was sold under some false pretenses and then developed and concreted over. So I heard a lot of stories growing up about what that creek was like and old salmon, and that's just not the case today. I got involved with a group called the Gary Oak Coalition that was paying attention to a lot of the environmental issues in Lakewood around, the destruction of these Gary Oak trees, which are also known as Oregon White Oak or Prairie Oaks. They are the only native oak tree in the state and support more wildlife and biodiversity than any other tree species in our state. So we've seen the city of Lakewood approve just constant cutting of these trees. And folks worked for a long time to develop some protections for them, but they are still meager at best. So different connections there. But I think the last thing that really got me plugged into it was, I was working at Food Bank in Lakewood for about a year, and I kept driving past Clover Creek and seeing how polluted it was. There was a little salmon sign, right? And I was like, well, this is Salmon Creek. Why are there like seven shopping carts and bottles of laundry detergent in there? So yeah, I just started asking questions and learning more about it, realizing that, as somebody who spent a lot of time in Lakewood and grew up in that area, like, oh, it's been, beneath my feet this whole time, this creek, and it's in really bad shape and it needs advocates.
Yeah, it sounds like this kind of work is in your DNA in a sense, certainly within your experience. And you've been living in Pierce County or around Pierce County for a long time, right?
Yeah, pretty much my whole life. I mean, my family moved out to the Roy area when I was 3 or 4 years old. So, I grew up kind of in the Roy, like Yelm area, and my mom's family has always lived in Lakewood. So,
Yeah, you qualify as a local, I would say. So and I sort of feel like I do too. I've lived around Pierce County since the early 70s, so I didn't get here when I was four, but you know what? This is home to me too. And I love this country that we live in, and it pains me to see what we've done to it in certain cases. So you mentioned shopping carts, laundry, soap containers in the creek. And of course, I think anybody, just about anybody, would cringe on seeing a natural waterway treated like that. So, how do you find the folks that live along the creeks, the streams, and around the area? How do you find they feel about how the creeks are doing?
Well, I would say like a lot of our early members were folks who live on the creek and are deeply upset by the lack of action around it. Our past vice president lives along the creek in Fredrickson, and he watched his neighbor drop tree upstream from him into the creek and just start backfilling it. And he, called code enforcement, many, many times, and they refused to do anything. So he was feeling really disenfranchised. He was like, this has totally changed the flow of the creek. This dam has created a big lake here. And part of the problem is that these obstructions in the upper watershed are stopping water from flowing down into the rest of the system. So that was one person. I mean, our new vice president or current treasurer also lives along the creek in Parkland, and has just been noticing every year the water comes later. So it does dry out there, but usually it would refill and in the fall. Now it's like in the winter, now it's late winter. So people are really tired of seeing this happen and really see the way that the creek is deprioritized and ignored, and I think pretty fired up about it. Of course, we haven't talked to everybody on the creek. There are bad actors. There are people that want to cut down all the trees by the creek, or want to modify it in whatever way. But whenever we do go out and knock doors and talk to people, most people, their values do not align with having a dead, drying creek in their backyard.
So I'm just curious, let's say pre-European times, do we know or not know whether there was active year-round water flow prior to, let's call it the European arrival?
Well, I mean, there was even after European arrival. So Clover Creek was actually the main drinking water source from the city of Tacoma.
Wow.
So they had an aqueduct from the headwaters today in what is now the Old Sportsman's Club. They actually just transferred that property at those headwaters to the Sportsman's Club, which has created a land trust. So very, very good news there. But water was so abundant that it would, feed a growing city with thousands of people. We know that the creek did not go dry seasonally and actually flooded seasonally. They described it as a winter river. It wasn't until, I think, around the 1940s that it would dry for the first time.
Well, yeah, so major impact of our urbanization, industrialization, and so on and so forth. You mentioned a guy having problems with code enforcement, so that makes me wonder, and you've mentioned County Executive Denmeyer a couple of times. Of course, we know that he's not going to be the county executive anymore, so maybe that's going to help with some of the work that you do. Generally speaking, do you see the city and the county gov cities and county governments as assets or barriers to accomplishing the goals that you have?
Well, I think the cities within the watershed really vary. I think I'm hopeful that the city of Fir Crest will move to protect the headwaters of Leech Creek. That is a property that's undeveloped and up for grabs. I think the city of Lakewood has been a bad actor in a lot of ways. They've unfortunately talked about things like dredging the creek and raising the dikes and just turning it into a drain. They don't seem very interested in bringing salmon back. Ben Pierce County has been also been a major barrier. So whether or not that changes with the change of leadership, we'll have to see. I like to think that having a former executive director of the conservation district up there is going to help, but we're not going to rest on our laurels, and we're going to be organizing the political pressure we need to move them.
So I'm thinking about the county government. Is Jenny Hitchin is what the area that you're talking about, is that in Jenny Hitchin's district?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know her casually, informally, and my guess is that she's going to be a strong supporter of, and it probably has been a strong supporter of the kind of work that you're doing.
She really has. Yeah. I mean, we haven't accomplished policy yet, but she's been open to hearing us out, and we sent her hundreds and hundreds of emails. So, along with the rest of the county council, and she seemed to take it well.
So what is your focus right now? If there is a specific focus, what is your focus right now in terms of like what are the next steps?
I think for me, with the organization, we have been pretty focused on the Sipaliću area. Sipaliću is a creek that is not connected to Clover Creek by a surface water. It shares the same groundwater and is part of the watershed, and it starts at Sipaliću Lake, which is located within Port Louis, and it flows, or it used to flow, out through the city of DuPont. At some point, I think in the 1960s, Port Louis built a concrete diversion canal at the outflow of Sequatchie Lake, takes the majority of that water and just shuttles it out to Puget Sound. So Sequatchie Creek, as it flows through the city of DuPont, is dry. There's a really popular hiking trail called the Sequatchie Creek Trail. Probably the only reason most people come to DuPont is to go walk that. And it takes you down into a canyon where a combination of groundwater and these seeps on the side of the trail create some semblance of flow through the creek. And that flow is present pretty much year round. The creek borders what's called the Calportland gravel mine. Calportland wants to mine closer to the creek, and specifically, they want to take out about 160 acres of forest. And they also want to achieve deeper penetration for their mine. So they've submitted a plan to drain the Vashon Aquifer in a 2 mile radius to do that. That would wipe out the remaining flow in Sequatchie Creek and kill a lot of the vegetation. It would hurt the wells that the city of DuPont relies on, and it would risk the possibility of saltwater infiltration from Puget Sound. So that's certainly a focus of ours. A similar project was approved along Sipaliću Creek called the DuPont West Warehouse. This is going to take out about 20 acres of forest and historic prairie land. And it's going to require that the city of DuPont moves a section of the Sipaliću Creek Trail. So we had been organizing opposition to that while informing people about the broader issues on Sipaliću Creek for a few months now. On the 29th, in 3 days, we're going to have our second public walk of the property where people can see what's on the chopping block.
Yeah, so disturbing for sure. So just using the vernacular that I would use, the gravel pit. So how long, well, let me back up a second. Who is the permitting authority that's going to say yes or no for that operation?
So what we've noticed is that things like this usually go to a hearing examiner. The hearing examiner is appointed either by Pierce County or the city of DuPont. These people are, they really vary. It's not a democratic decision. It's essentially a lawyer who has been hired to look at the code for this case, take in public feedback, and then make a decision.
Okay, so well, how long has this gravel pit been? How long has it been since it was initially proposed?
I mean, people have been mining gravel in DuPont, I would say, since colonization. And the thing about DuPont is that, the first white settlement was there. Fort Nisqually was not built in Point Defiance, for everyone's information.
Yeah.
It was moved from the DuPont area up on the Nisqually Plain. And yeah, people, once they got there, and this would have been the 17, right? Yeah, no. Mid 1800s, and yeah, I'd have to get the exact founding date, but you had the British come in with the Hudson Bay Company, and then the Americans come in much later and enact a campaign of genocide against the Native people there.
Yeah, so in a certain sense, it seems like a very familiar story that there's a desire to bring some industry in on the one hand, and there's concerns about the health of the environment on the other hand. And by the way, draining an aquifer with all of the consequences of that seems like a pretty major intervention. And really, I can't Offhand, I can't see what kind of mitigation there could be for that. I mean, is there any way of mitigating draining an aquifer?
No. that's the short answer. Cal Portland has wanted to do this for a long time, though, and they actually, if you look up Sequoia Creek Restoration Plan, you'll see a plan that was made by them that allows them to do what they want to do, right? All it does is it proposes to fix the some of the outflow problem at JBLM to replace the water that they'll be taking out. It is like an absurdly little amount of of mitigation that they're offering to do. But the fact is, and the fact that we really illustrate with our organization is that Pierce County and the cities in our watershed, they have no plan to restore watershed.
And how could they really? So, of course, this show is called Climate Talk, and we haven't really talked about climate. So, can you see lessons or connections between, like, this, let's say, almost microcosmic work you're doing in terms of the global situation, connections or lessons learned that we could apply to concerns about our changing climate?
Absolutely. I think that there is a budding science that understands the connection between intact and healthy ecosystems in the carbon cycle. And we need to strengthen our carbon cycle to draw down more carbon. For a long time, people felt that forests were our best bet for drawing down carbon. But there's been more of a realization that grasslands actually play a significant role. But grasslands rely on their relationship with large grazers. So, like the Great Plains, they relied on bison to till the soil and to keep that cycle going. If you were to go look in, sub-Saharan Africa, right? They rely on elephants and rhinos and all of that. And if you were to look at the historic Siberian American Arctic, they relied on mammoths and woolly rhinos and a whole suite of megafauna to make that a carbon capturing and intact ecosystem. Of course, when humans came in, they took out the Arctic ecosystem through hunting and specialized big game hunting. But I think what people are starting to realize is that the ocean is actually functioning like a big grassland, and large grazers like whales are functioning like elephants. They are eating the plankton, and then they are producing waste, which phytoplankton, which produce the oxygen and absorb most of this carbon, need to grow. So when you think of this big grassland ecosystem that is the ocean, we need healthy fish populations for that. We need our southern resident orcas, right? And we need salmon. So if we want a healthy carbon cycle in Puget Sound and in this area, we need those salmon to be able to spawn and swim out to sea and do their thing, right? They're all grazers. They're eating, they're pooping, and they're feeding the phytoplankton that we need. So I know it took a lot of steps to get there, but healthy ecosystems, strong ecosystems draw down the maximum amount of carbon.
No, I think your summary was brilliant, and I certainly learned some perspectives from just listening to this just now that I hadn't had before. So one of the things that I hear very often from people is they're concerned, but they say, "Well, what can I do?" Because the challenge of climate change seems so incredibly large that people can rightfully look and say, well, it doesn't seem like I can make much difference. But I'm thinking of kind of a micro and macro view here. So, let's, in a sense, talk about the Clover Creek system as a micro view, but it's part of the big macro view of what's happening worldwide. And listening to you, absolutely, it's something that people right now, right here, can get involved with, even get out there and look at what's going on and takes positive steps in terms of restoration and so on. So that seems like a pretty inspiring view.
I hope so. I mean, this is this is our community. This is where we live. This is the water we drink. This is the air we breathe. And I think we benefit from the fact that, like, planting trees, which reduces carbon, helps us preserve and recharge our drinking water, right? So there's a lot of ways that doing watershed restoration is symbiotic and even like directly contributing to our need to draw down carbon. That's my perspective. I think broadly though, you have this specific part of Washington where, colonization began, right? Where the stewards of this watershed were forced off, and into reservations or were massacred. And because of that, I think it's almost like an orphan watershed. It's been hit really hard by the alterations that came with colonization. All of our forests are like being murdered by English ivy, or development, or we've got all these lawns and golf courses that have come in, right? So we think that, if we can do this, it could serve as a model for, not just restoring an ecosystem, but coexisting with one. There's this idea that, like, oh, Washingtonians, they love salmon, they love nature. But, I wrote about this in a piece I just published in the Weekly Volcano. But when salmon were returning, and they still are, there was a paper that published, like, well, here's where you can view salmon returning. And there's just this big gap in Pierce County, right? Or in this watershed where, even though there's X number of creeks, you can't go into any of these and go look and enjoy the view. And that, to me, that's really eye-opening.
As I listen to you, I have two kind of takeaways. One is the sadness of how we have treated our environment, but I also get your vision, which is inspiring that, we can do something about this. So as we finish up here, folks that would like to know more about what you're doing, how would they find out more?
Yeah, if you Google the Clover Creek Restoration Alliance, you can find our website. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, and join our email list, and we will send updates about the hands-on work we do. Work parties, pulling invasives, planting trees, picking up trash, and then the advocacy work we do. We are certainly eyeing the Chambers Creek Dam coming into 2025, which is a non-functional, I mean functional in that it blocks water, but it produces no electricity. It has no function other than blocking salmon migration. We want to get that thing removed as fast as possible.
Okay, well, Sean Arendt, president of the Clover Creek Restoration Association, it's been great having you with us today. I've learned a lot. We'll put a link to your organization with the show notes when this goes on the air at KTAH. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Sean for bringing his description of the damage we've done to the Clover Creek watershed over the years. That there are forces at work that want to continue the damage, and that the solution is active optimism from those who care, doing the hard physical and political work of bringing the watershed back to health. Thanks to Sean for showing us the way. If you want to be part of that work, do an internet search for Clover Creek Restoration Alliance or check out our show notes on the KTAH website in the Climate Talk archive. Have a great day, and as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.